Podcast.
Are we saying podcast?
Welcome back. Welcome back to Fanboys and Filthy Casual. Back at you live once again. This is Dennis.
This is Lewis.
This is Harold.
We are on our fifth week of
COVID-19. Oh, Lord, dude.
I think it is, right? Fifth week of COVID-19. And Lewis, Harold, and I are just really raring to get out of our houses now. I was talking to Lewis where I was looking for ways to just get out of my house just so that I can do anything, like to the point where I started exercising. I woke up early the last couple of days. I woke up early in the morning and I was like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go for an hour walk.
Dang, dude.
Are you wearing a mask when you go running though, or walking?
I am wearing a mask, but I go to a pretty isolated park, and so like the last couple of days, I think I only passed by one person once, you know. So it's at 7 o'clock in the morning, so pretty much everybody's still sleeping.
Nice, dude. Yeah. Myself, I've been walking my dog a little extra to the point where, yeah, even my dog's now looking at us like, dude, that's enough. I got a little short-legged pug who can only like make that's why I love him, because you can only make it like a block and he's already winded, so he wants to turn back around. But myself, in the last week or so, it's like, nah, dude, we gotta keep going. I need to get some more fresh air, and it's the weather's got nicer, so you can't beat it. How about you, H?
It's weird, not weird, but yeah, like you said, the weather has been a lot nicer this week than any other week, and or for at least for a while, and I've seen the past couple of days that traffic has been kind of upticking. So when I go to work, because technically I'm an essential worker, so if you get mad, I'm sorry, but it's kind of what we're in. When I go into work in the mornings, for the past 3 or 4 weeks, it's been a really smooth ride where I literally see maybe 10 cars on the freeway. And within the past week, it's been actual almost traffic getting to the freeway.
Oh wow. And then,
yeah, right. So and then once I exit, usually when I exited before, it'd only be like 2 or 3 cars maybe, and that would be considered a busy day. But today when I exited, there was about 15 cars when I exited. So I know there hasn't been a lift of restrictions anywhere, because I mean, we're all supposedly, you know, listening to all the advice and the restrictions that have been put upon us. And we, at least the people here, have been very adamant about following all those provisions.
Yep.
And it's just weird that it looks like people are doing it recreationally.
Oh, okay.
Lewis hates it when people do it recreationally.
Yeah. You gotta do it socially, guys.
Now,
You have to be in a relationship before you do that.
Exactly.
Harold, real quick, I'm kind of confused. I didn't know being a strip club announcer was a worker.
No, you're talking about my dream job, which is
okay.
I mean, who else is going to queue up those girls, man?
Exactly.
Was that fake news, Harold?
You can't tell them what my real job is, man. You know what? A quick story before we get into what we get into. You know where I got the idea of that I want to be a strip club DJ, right?
No, where?
Please tell us.
From Joe's bachelor party.
That guy.
Yeah, that guy.
That guy, Joe. Like that.
Yeah. But you remember you know what I'm talking about, right, Dan?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Just if you want to hear about it. I'm going to tell it right now because this is nuts.
I was going to say,
go for it.
Subscribe to Harold's OnlyFans for more. But Treyon is apparently very old now.
Yeah.
Even Lizzo has an OnlyFans. So.
I would pay for that. Wait, what happened?
That's a pass for me, dude. Lizzo, Lizzo, one of the biggest...
Dennis, look it up real quick.
I know who Lizzo is. And that's a hard pass on me, too.
I'll take your word for it, H.
I don't know, man. This quarantine's got
I know we're all about body positivity, but
yes.
Hard pass.
Oh man. So, you know, before we get into the meat and potatoes of today's episode, you know, as usual, I do love my potpourri. So what have you guys been up to in the last week since we last recorded? I know, obviously we've been quarantined, forcing ourselves to, you know, consume whatever pop is out there in the comfort of our home. So what you guys been up to?
I'll start. Animal Crossing is still going strong. Yeah. I finally had KK Slider come in and do his concert. I know. And the other one is that I just randomly, like the other day, I was thinking to myself, you know, there has to be like a multiplayer game that I can play with my daughter and my wife. And then I thought to myself, you know, one of the best multiplayer games out there, at least in the past, was Castle Crashers for the Xbox 360. And I remember playing that to death. And I was like, man, they don't do anything like that anymore. So I went on Google and I typed up, you know, games like Castle Crashers. And all of a sudden it said, Castle Crashers Remix for the Switch. I'm like, yes, please. So I told Lewis, because I know he's up for good bargains. So for $14.95, you get the download for the Switch. And, you know, I've been playing the last couple of days. It's still the same. Same old. I still remember every single, twist and turn and everything. But I don't know. There's something about beat 'em ups that doesn't age for me. But the cool thing is that my daughter is now into it. But she only likes it when it's like the three of us. So you know, every so often, my daughter and I will be on Switch and we'll be just crashing some castles over there.
Is that what you do? How about you, H?
I have been binging Community. I forgot how awesome that show is. It's funny because I would watch it all the time when it first came out, and I have all of the seasons on DVD and watched all the extras and all that stuff. But it's like it took, you know, I guess not having commercials like with Hulu kind of stymied me, because it's like, I just want to watch the whole thing, you know, straight. And then with Hulu, if you fall asleep while your Hulu is on, it stops. But like with Netflix, it just keeps going until it's like, hey man, you still there? And Community, it's just been, for the past week or so, I'm already up to like episode 20 or something, and which is kind of complicated when you actually have to work for like 9 hours a day and stuff. But yeah, that show still, yeah, I remember watching it now makes me really realize how much I love that show. And I'm kind of excited to kind of remember old episodes, just because it's been so long since I've seen them. And then see the seasons that I actually didn't end up watching that were like on Yahoo or whatever, because who has time to watch Yahoo TV shows and everything? But yeah.
Yeah, what a dark time in streaming that was when shows were on Yahoo. Because I think that was a weird experiment, wasn't it? Like, it wasn't just Community. I think it was like they tried to pump out original material too on Yahoo, but nobody's going to go on yahoo.com just to watch a show, right?
Yeah. No, I don't even know why they bothered, but, you know, maybe at the time they said it was the same thing about Netflix, but, yeah, you know, see how it is.
Funnily enough, I think the part that I miss most about, you know, commuting and still going back to work is, you know, I mentioned before, like, my commute's pretty bad. Not bad, long. You know, I take a train for about an hour from home to work. That's kind of what I miss, because I realize how much that, you know, those 2 hours every day I'm able to just read or watch shows or whatnot. Turns out I can't do that because my kids need attention and they can't feed themselves yet. I'm like, come on, guys. Just microwave something. If it doesn't burn, you should be okay. But so yeah, actually haven't had a chance to do a lot of stuff around the house, or, you know, read or actually, no, I take it back. Well, you know, I did start a little book club with some of our followers. So, you know, shout out to them. This is going to be our second week, or we're on our second book this week. So hopefully it keeps going strong. And, you know, when the quarantine does lift and the stay at home order goes away, you know, it will still be something that we keep going.
Is that the book club thing you guys are doing? That's a personal thing, right? You're not doing that for like shared consumption?
For now, yeah, pretty personal. Because I mean, it's the funny thing is, like, you know, there's four of us in this little group, and all of us have brought it up before that we wanted to do a book club, but none of us have ever done it. So it was just, I guess, good timing and happenstance that, you know, hey, we're stuck at home, read a book. But I mean, yeah, I mean, so now that it's out there in theory, now that I'm talking about it on our podcast, yeah, I mean, look for us on the groups. Or I mean, I'll post something out there when this goes live if anybody else wants to join us. Like I mentioned, we are starting our second book this time. If you'd love to join in, we have a Zoom, you know, we'll talk, read, go over that. Yeah, sorry. Then,
oh, sorry.
I think the book talk kind of put us to sleep for a second.
Thanks, Torx.
So today our topic is something that's near and dear to my heart. You know, the late 80s, early 90s, you know, a lot of really cool stuff, a lot of really cool pop culture events happen that to this day still resonates. And what we want to talk about today is something that's actually been one of my favorites to this day, and even something that my daughter actually loves. And I kind of suggested to the guys to kind of talk about it, especially since that's what we do. We talk about icons that has happened in the past. And what I wanted to talk to you guys about was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And something that has been going for the longest time. So I kind of wanted to ask, first and foremost, your experiences with it. You know, when did you hear about it? What have you, or especially in the early days, the 80s and the 90s, what do you guys remember about it? And I think we can kind of talk about one of the biggest accomplishments that Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles did, aside from the TV show, which is their very first movie, something that we really didn't expect, to be honest with you. So I'll start with you, Lou. What's your experience? You know, you like it, you don't. When did you start finding out about it? Let me know.
I personally love the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. It's definitely, like you said, something growing up in the 80s into the 90s, one of those fun franchises that you couldn't avoid back then. You know, growing up in the Philippines, you were surrounded by either G.I. Joe, Transformers, and He-Man in that, you know, mid-80s phase. But I think the Ninja Turtles hit that sweet spot for myself personally, you know, transitioning from the 80s to the early 90s, where you weren't too much into the kiddie stuff anymore. You were over the Smurfs and all that jazz, but you were looking for something, you know, pun unintended, something a little edgier, I guess. But the Ninja Turtles hit that spot. So, you know, I love the cartoon. I think that was my first exposure to the Ninja Turtles was definitely the 80s cartoon. You know, it's a little schlocky now to look back at it, but it was definitely a lot of fun. And I think it was one of those great, like, two-hit combos, because I loved the cartoon, and then when you went to the mall, which was still a big, you know, a big thing back then, you go to every toy store or even any department store, they had to have Ninja Turtles toys on display. So that's how I was barraged in my youth, like the shows and then the toys. I remember still, you know, begging my parents, like, I gotta have all four Ninja Turtles. And to be perfectly honest, to this day, it still kills me a little bit because I don't have all four. I think I got Mikey and Raph. But, you know, I don't know what it was about Filipinos, but they love Donatello, and there was never any Leonardo figures. So that kind of killed me a little bit. But, yeah, so that was my first exposure. I love the franchise. It's definitely one of those, like, it's crazy to me how, if you think of it, like, the Ninja Turtles encompasses, like, every form of, like, pop media, basically. You know, the cartoons, the toys. Not to mention the you know, the video games, which, you know, I'm sure it's a lot of, if you, even the arcades and the home consoles, and then, yeah, like you said, the movies. So it hit everybody, it hit everything and everybody. It was one of those lightning in a bottle kind of things. H.
I remember when it first came out, and the cartoon first came out, because for a lot of the time that I was a kid, I used to hang out with the same three other guys. Two of them were my cousins, and one of them was like a really close family friend that was basically family to us. So at the time, we were taking martial arts. And, well, three of us were, and as usual, my cousin Russ decided he didn't want to do it. But two of us ended up being really serious about it, having doing that for like a decade. But there was four of us, so we were always like, okay, we need to delegate and everybody here gets to be one person. And, you know, because that's, you know, you try to relate when you have, especially because there's an exact count. So four and four, and we're like, okay, so my cousin, the youngest one, he was like, I'm the most fun one, so I get to meet Michelangelo, which in retrospect is the worst decision for him because he actually ended up being the most serious out of the, well, actually worst. But, like, he wasn't the party animal that the other two, i.e. myself and my other buddy, ended up being. And because I was a jerk as a child, and obviously that transitioned to being kind of a douchebag now, I was and forever will be the Raphael of our group. So I was always, and I don't know why this is funny, but they all had like cool weapons and then like Raphael had size. And it's like, you know, if there's a distance fight, he always loses because... It's no like range. Me, he only got 3 inches in range, you know what I'm saying?
And you know, sometimes 3 inches is
plenty.
All you need, dude.
It's two more than you need.
it's about accuracy.
Yeah. And he had two, so he wielded both of them at the same time. Donatello was pretty much useless. And so that was like our thing was anytime that the episodes would come on early in the mornings, you know. So right before school, you end up watching all of these things. So you take that and you know, like I said, after school, I end up doing karate. And it was like, I saw this move on Ninja Turtles. And I want to know if this is a completely feasible move kind of deal. And anytime we would do the training and any of those weapons were there, we would always pretend that we were that character. And one of the times I actually ended up winning a katana at a tournament. So, like, my cousin got the other katana, and I was like, let me borrow your sword so I can, you know, pull out both swords at the same time from behind my shell and see if this will actually work. And totally did not work. The sheath was a little too stiff and ended up almost cutting my finger off. But, you know, stuff like that happens. And
we're still talking about katanas, right?
Yes, I'm talking about katanas now. And it's one of those things where, like, that has been a forever link with at least the four of us. We would always mention like, oh yeah, I remember when we were little kids. And you know, so now when my other cousin posts stuff and he talks about like how much like martial arts is such a big part of his life, it's like sadly enough, but it's the Karate Kid, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and Bloodsport that binds our bond.
Dude, I just realized we've never talked about Bloodsport or like.
It's gonna be like a 10-episode arc if we talk about Bloodsport.
We have to go like every single like scene. personally, I think like Lewis, I'm trying to remember if Lewis did they actually show the show on TV in the Philippines?
I thought that. I don't know, dude. It might be one of those Nelson Mandela effects. I feel like I did see them, but I cannot confirm like what channel was it on or how I consumed it. But I could swear we saw it on TV, dude. Or I could have sworn they showed it on TV somehow. Yeah, or was it just the commercials?
It had to have been on TV because when I went in 90, I remember watching it there on TV. Like I would wake up early at my cousin's house just so I can watch the cartoons there. So it had to have been, unless like, and I know my province is way more rural than your guys's are. You know, there's no electricity. It's literally my grandma like churning a wheel just so the power would work and stuff.
Yeah, just so the Betamax would play.
That's where the hamster came in and everything. No, what do you call this? So when I do remember, for some reason, I can't remember how I watched it, but I do remember I got obsessed where, unlike Harold, the one character that really stuck with me and I always connected with was Raphael, just because I've always been like an angry person deep down. And so
deep down.
Okay, fine. Showed
outright,
right? And okay, fine. But I'm an angry person. But you know, so I've always had that. And what's funny is that when I was buying toys, it's kind of fun that Harold Lewis was talking about. But there was so many Leonardos, like.
It's the opposite.
Yeah, like there was so many, but I was desperate to get like a Raphael. I just wanted that, so I had all three in the Philippines, which was expensive, of course. But I just could not get my hands on a Raphael. In terms of comic books, did you guys ever read the comics? I know that the Eastman and Laird didn't really like. Exactly how the 1980s Turtles cartoons came about, but of course we all know that it started with the comic books. Did you have any prior experiences before the TV show, or was it mainly the TV show?
For me, actually, that's fun. That's great you brought it up, because this is total, you know. Filthy casual status here, but I didn't even know about the comic book until I came here in the States in 94. Like, you know, or not even then. Like, I want to say I was probably not until high school where I found those trade paperbacks, which, you know, Dennis was nice enough to gift my eldest the trade paperback a few years ago. So that was actually one of the first times that I read through the whole thing. I didn't know about the comic books until I came here. And when I finally did get a chance to read through the original trade paperbacks, I was surprised at how different the material is. I mean, yeah, aesthetically, yes, it's the same. There's four turtles, you know, ninjas, a rat master and whatnot. But the comic book was surprisingly violent and kind of like gory and whatnot. But, you know, it shows the influence because, you know, Dennis, correct me if I'm wrong, but the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles were influenced, or, you know, like you mentioned, the creators Eastman and Laird, were influenced by the big comic books of the 80s, the X-Men, Teen Titans on DC, and, you know, the ninja shenanigans on, you know, Daredevil and, you know, I guess all the ninjutsu kung fu stuff going around during the 80s. But, yeah, so the comic books I was not really exposed to until I came here to the country. So, you know, it's really nice to kind of look back at it. Like I mentioned, they are in trades now, so if you guys – or whenever this ban is lifted, feel free to buy it on Amazon. But go check it out if you haven't.
It's funny. It used to be my treasured comic book purchase. That I actually had a second printing of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles number one.
Wow!
It wasn't like mint condition. It was used, but it was one of those things where I was so happy to have that copy. And I remember watching it or reading it, and you're right, Lou, it's completely different. And, definitely the Turtles was influenced by Daredevil in particular, especially if you take out that the graphic novel that I gave your son. If you take a look at like the origin story, you actually see that there's a Matt Murdock lookalike. One of the things, and it's they kind of playfully have like a connection between. Remember in Daredevil where his origin story is that he saves somebody and something nuclear waste hits his face and it burns him. But in the comic book, there's a guy that with glasses that drops the turtles and
that's right.
And it's like, whoa, you know, there's that connection. But unfortunately, I have to tell you. There was a tough time in my life where I needed money, and that was one of the things that I actually had to part ways with. I did get a pretty damn good price on it, so I'm not too sad about it. But still, one of those things where if only I didn't need, you know, tuition and all those things.
If only you didn't need toilet paper and food.
I remember actually one of my classmates was, they're big, a lot of my classmates are actually big comic book fans. And they were actually of the type who was saying that they hated the cartoon because it was nothing like the comic book that they were so enamored with. And one of them had brought a copy of issue number one, and I can never forget what the cover looks like, black and white.
Yep.
And everybody looking really, you know, more rectangular than anything else and sharper. And I was, he's like, dude, check this out real quick. This is what it's supposed to be like. And I was reading it, and I was like, Jesus, this is dark. Yeah. And the thing that I always remember is, because, you know, like Dennis talked about earlier, the comic book being influenced by, of all things, Daredevil. I always remember that one thing is, you know, in Daredevil comics, the Ninja Clan is known as the Hand. And that's why in, you know, Ninja Turtles, they're known as the Foot Clan.
Very clever, Eastman and Laird. Very subtle.
At least it wasn't the finger.
Can you imagine?
The what are the reasons why I fell in love with the cart? Like, I love the cartoon. Don't get me wrong. You know, to this day, I still have fond memories of it. But for me, the one thing that really ingrained the Turtles to me was the comic book, because if you read, and if you, especially that very first episode, first issue, you know, you see them getting cut, you see them bleeding, you see them, you know, getting hurt. And especially during that time in the 80s, although there was grit and although there was, you know, like really bad stuff happening, you didn't see anything along those lines. And so at least for me, when I first read that comic book, that changed the way I saw the Turtles, to the point where I admittedly, after reading the comic book, in some small way, I was one of those snotty like fanboys going, that's not how the Turtles are supposed to be. You know, they're supposed to have red bandanas, all of them, not, you know, not like
not color coded,
you know. So definitely something that you know, that changed the landscape, I have to tell you, to the point where I don't know if you guys remember, but there was so many commercials, especially once I got here in the 90s, you know, even though it was already like 3-4 years past its prime, I guess you could say, that's when the Turtles had like different gimmicks already on the TV show. The marketing, the advertising, all of those things, especially like, was it Pizza Hut, right?
I think so. Yeah. I was already here when I saw them. They were still shilling. They were still the marketing face for Pizza Hut. Yeah, that was crazy.
Yeah. So definitely something that has gone through and has grown all throughout. But you know, at least for me, the one thing that I didn't know that it was going to happen, but when it happened, I was really, really surprised, and I was shocked at how much I liked it. Was, of course, what we were talking about a while ago, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie. You know, I was watching it the other day when we talked about this, and I completely forgot just how much they really took issue number one. And for those people who don't know what issue number one is, it basically retells the origin story of the Turtles, to the point where by the end of issue number one, they actually kill off the Shredder, you know, because when Eastman and Laird first came up with the concept, they really didn't know it was going to be successful. You know, they talk about how it was two people, two artists who just like were just throwing ideas at each other, to the point where they came up with this comic book, not knowing that it was going to be a hit. So one of their biggest regrets is that their main bad guy they kill off at the very, very offset of the actual show, to the point where that's exactly what the movie looks like. You know, so let's start off with the movie. What was your reaction to it? Did you guys like it? And then maybe kind of talk about you know, give our usual review, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Harold, how about you? Let's start.
It's one of those, you know, cultural milestones, I guess. Like I said, when the movie originally came out, I was hanging out with my cousins a lot. And this is a story that I've heard in just in the recent past couple of years, is that one of my cousins was actually, remember there used to be, I don't know if you guys were in America at the time. Oh, no, you weren't.
I like how they keep asking that question, by the way.
Because it was in the early, it was 1990, you know what I mean?
And oh, yeah, I was there already. And then,
yeah, Dennis was here. Lewis, not yet.
No.
There used to be, and I don't know if they, it was still there, but there used to be a movie theater inside of Northridge Mall. So not outside like how it is now, but in, actually there was a movie theater inside. And I found out that one of my godbrothers, or one of my cousins, was working there. But my older cousin was like, hey, I'm going to take you guys out to watch the movie. And me and my two cousins are like, why is he being so nice? Why all of a sudden is he being like a good person about this? And it ended up being, from what I've been told, is that the money my parents gave him to take me and my cousins out, he actually pocketed it himself. And then he got us into the movie for free because our other cousin worked there. And he gave us like popcorn and all that kind of stuff because he just hooked it up. And the other story I remember is right before we had to get to the movie theater, my youngest cousin had to take a piss. And my older cousin was like, nah, dude, just hold it. And my cousin was like, dude, I'm going to pee in your car. So we had to pull over to the side, like in some random freaking street. And then he, I said freaking, some random street. And he like took a piss. So right before the movie started, like, we could not stop laughing at the fact that we almost started the movie with my cousin peeing his pants. So that's my forever story. 30 years later, I will never forget that date. But the thing I will actually remember about the movie itself is the fact that none of the stories or a lot of the storyline in the movie were not at all similar to what I knew from the cartoon. So at first, when we were watching it, my cousins and I were like, that's not how it goes, or that's not what how it's supposed to be. Because, you know, we're like little kids at the time, so we don't really know anything better. And so for that, it ruined it just a little bit when that started. But from then on, we were able to just enjoy the story for what it was, where it's literally just an action movie. You know, a lot of me getting really deep into it because the main character basically ends up being Raphael. So it's like the whole plot line of the whole movie revolves around Raphael and April O'Neil. So it's like everything that I learned about the series and about the characters and everything that ended up being super important from what I learned from the movie.
Yeah. Awesome, dude. For me, the movie definitely was, like you said, a cultural phenomenon. That was not the Zoom conking out. That's just me. I can't speak English. You know, this was, you know, right after, you know, this is right on the tails of, you know, the Batman movie. So, you know, the moviegoers were in for a pretty solid run of like these great movies. You know, for me, like, just seeing it for the first time back in the 90s was just such a phenomenon. I unfortunately do not remember the details like Harold does, but, you know, I just remember seeing it. And this is like being like in awe of how they did the animatronics and the prosthetics. You know, it was just really, I thought it was really well done. I'm sure Dennis is going to ruin my buzz by telling me there was like sweat stains on somebody's armpits in the movie. But, you know, I was like really impressed as a kid. You know, I would have been 10 or 9 or 10 by at this time. I was super impressed by it. And then, so let's fast forward to, you know, it is now, you know, the first, the 1990 movie is on Netflix now. So, I did have a chance to watch it with my son, my 11-year-old son. And it was definitely different. I mean, he has his biggest exposure to Ninja Turtles has been the recent Nickelodeon cartoon that came out, I think, in 2014 or 15, something like that. Yeah. So, you know, he does know of the Ninja Turtles. So, you know, this me pulling up this movie from this 30-year-old movie was definitely something he was kind of excited and looking forward to. And so was I. I wanted to see how he would appreciate the show and see how it kind of deviated from what he knows and all that good stuff. And yeah, part of me says that the prosthetics and whatnot still hold up. I was pleasantly surprised to see that, actually, because, like, you know, the mouth movements, the martial arts, all the action that they threw in, and they didn't shy from showing the turtles. You know, it wasn't one of those kind of shows where, you know, like, nothing against, again, I keep going back to Batman, but, you know, the Michael Keaton Batman, he was only in the costume for maybe half the movie or whatnot, but TMNT, they really forced to have all the characters, especially Raph, like Harold mentioned, to be in front of the screen for at least, you know, three quarters of the time, and they weren't shy about showing Splinter either, which I believe was fully animatronic. Again, please correct me if I'm wrong, if there was somebody
inside. I believe so, yeah.
Okay, yeah, so they weren't shy about pulling away from him. So it was really well made. Like I said, it didn't look dated. So, yeah, kudos to the makers of that movie because it still looks good 30 years later.
No, you're right. I actually had an opportunity for my daughter to watch it. And kind of like, I for some reason, I really thought that she already did. And my daughter, kind of like your son, got her introduction to the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles for the Nickelodeon one, which was pretty good considering. But you know, one of the things that I really realized and I really appreciated was it still looks really good. I think, I don't know if you guys were with me, but there was one con that we actually had, and there was a guy that actually created a suit.
Yeah,
that was you, right, H?
Yeah, Lewis was there too.
I think it was there too. Yes.
Yeah,
and I think it was LA, but yeah, go ahead.
And I remember, I remember looking at it, I was like, dude, it's the movie version of it. And it's cool, you know. It's one of those things where my daughter kept on asking, "Is that real life? Is that, you know, what's going on here?" And I was trying to explain to her, "No, that's somebody in a costume." But every single time I would say somebody in a costume, they'd be doing flips, they'd be doing, you know, kicks, they'd be doing all these things. And I'm like, "How is this physically possible?" Considering that, you know, fast forward 25 years. You have, we're not going to talk about it today, but you have the Michael Bay Turtles. I think it was Michael Bay.
Yes, produced at least, yeah.
And, you know, most of it, at least, like the facial features, everything CGI. This one was animatronics, as you said, so it was really cool. But what I really did appreciate about that, the movie, again, being a fan of the comic book, it's not a direct, like, you know, it's not a direct take of the comic book. There are certain beats, there are certain parts of it that they take from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles number one. But eventually, though, as the storyline goes on, there are certain events happen where in the movie, you have that scene where Shredder captures Splinter. And they have to go out to the house, like a farm, and they have to, like, find their, you know, Raphael gets hurt, and all those things. All those things actually happen down the line in the comic series. You know, like, just even scenes like Casey Jones, like, in the truck, like, joking around with Donatello. Like, those things actually happen, which is pretty cool, you know. So that was the one thing, though. When I first watched it, I was amazed at how faithful it was, to the point where I was thinking about it today when I was watching it. You know, it one of the very first, at least for me, one of the very first faithful adaptations of a comic book that I never really thought about it too much. You know, we had, like, Batman and everything, which completely kind of creates its own. But this one was so true to the source material that I really did appreciate it.
I remember I was watching the behind the scenes things and how much the Jim Henson Company worked to get those puppets to look like exactly perfect. And it was kind of freaky on them showing how the mouths were moving so they were able to talk into the thing. And when the movie first came out on videotape, I remember having to buy two copies, one for myself and then one for my travel version, like, you know, like my travel version of La Bamba. So the one that you keep at home, and then the one that wherever you end up going, you just had to, for some reason, bring a copy of videotape somewhere. But the, yeah, that movie was just so, it was, because it was so different from the cartoon, it kind of made you a fan of just the franchise in general. Mm. Whereas opposed to being just a fan of the cartoon, you know what I mean?
I gotta say, I guess I, again, playing to my brand, I gotta be the filthy casual, because I was actually kind of, you know, when I was looking back at it, I was a little disappointed at the lack of Bebop and Rocksteady.
No, that's for
so like, yeah, so like you said, you know, that's me, the cartoon fan. I'm like, where are Shredder's henchmen? You know, where's Bebop, the Rhino, and Rocksteady? Like, why are they just going to be beating up on a bunch of teenage kids? They're supposed to be robot foot soldiers.
Yeah, exactly. Why is the Foot Clan actual human being?
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, wait a second. The Ninja Turtles are beating up on kids. God, what's wrong with you guys?
Speaking of, like, beating up, I'm surprised that, watching it, I'm surprised at how much they actually used their weapons. Especially considering that, and again, most likely we're going to have to do another episode when we talk about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Secret of the Ooze. No, but, you know, to the point where, somebody pointed out to me where, I forget when, somebody pointed out to me at no point in the second one, do they actually use any of their weapons? You know. That's why there's that scene at the beginning where you see them using like sports equipment to like beat up the foot soldiers, because they were prohibited from using those because it's supposed to be a kids' movie.
I did not know that. That is very interesting. Okay.
Michelangelo using his, you know, his nunchucks. You actually see Donatello hitting with his bow. You even see Leonardo slashing with his katana, to the point where he actually cuts. You know, there's a cut of the Shredder, which was, you know, cool. And then all of a sudden, of course, they had to, they had to kind of like tone down. But at least for the first movie, I was surprised at how much, considering again, animatronics, costumes, at how faithful it was to martial arts, at least during that time.
That's why it's kind of interesting of seeing the characters of the Foot Clan or the ninjas actually being human beings, where it was weird to be in like my head. I was like, how are they going to use their actual weapons against human beings instead of robots? Where it's like, you know, when they're fighting the robots, feel free to slash and like stab and, you know, decapitate any of the robots, because, you know, they're just, you know, general artificial intelligence. But in actual human beings, where I'd be like, he's not gonna stab that guy, is he? Or like, if he hits him with a nunchuck in the head, he's gonna kill him. So, you know.
Speaking of the gore in the movie, there wasn't much. I mean, it's not like anybody's fingers or hands get lopped off, but I was surprised that, like, I think one of the most jarring scenes, at least for me, I mean, was how, I don't know if I just blocked that out of my head, but when Splinter was tied up in the foot layer, and he was, like, even though, yes, he was an animatronic, you know, four-foot-tall rat, his hair was matted down with, like, blood and stuff, and I'm like, okay, that's kind of much. And I was like, poor guy. So he kind of really fell for him. But like you said, then I am looking forward to watching Secret of the Ooze now, because I want to see how they did, you know, dumb it down for more of the sense. I mean, the only memory I really have of Secret of the Ooze is Go Ninja Go. So, you know, I don't remember the rest of the movie. And I guess I hate to be the guilty party, but I'm guessing that's why they added Taka and Rezar in the second movie? Because dorks like me were like, where's Bebop and Rocksteady?
Yeah, but then why include those guys and then not call them like Rocksteady and Bebop?
Right?
That was super disappointing to me. I forgot the question already. I'm totally blanking right now.
Well, while you're thinking of the whole thing, since we're talking about gore and thinking about how bad things were, one of my favorite characters of that movie is, of course, Casey Jones, where Casey Jones is there's a couple of scenes there where Casey Jones could have easily killed somebody, you know, the golf club to the face of definitely would have like crushed that person's face. But the one thing that people oftentimes kind of forget about is the last scene between Shredder and Casey Jones, where, mm-hmm. Where Casey Jones is this, friend, is kind of this funny, like, psychopath, and then all of a sudden becomes a murderer.
A murdering psychopath.
At the end of this, and nobody says anything. It's like,
because it's an accident, right?
He killed, he like intentionally turns it on and he goes, oops. that Casey.
I know. Theaters full of children are like, yay!
No, I thought he just crushed his helmet, right? No.
It was okay, right?
And then there's blood on the side of the.
Yeah. Seriously, it's like, whoa. No, that's just trash, man. Somebody left tomatoes in the trash.
I remember my question. This is my question for Den. Okay, so in the comic or whatever, in the movie, they explained that the turtles were able to mutate into somewhat human being forms because they were in contact with humans, and that's why they're able to grow to be giant turtles, right?
Yes.
Did they ever explain how come Splinter was able to turn into a giant rat?
Because he spent a lot of time with Orokosaki. I mean, Hamato Yoshi.
Okay, but how did he become giant?
Because he's waded into the the ooze.
Oh, did he?
Yeah. The flashback. There you go. In the flashback, he actually says that the turtles were in the ooze, and then he goes and picks them up.
Oh, okay.
He actually does it. I thought the question was going to be, how come a rat was able to learn kung fu from a martial artist?
that's more realistic.
So the rat in a cage doing punches and kicks is more realistic than Splinter becoming huge. Got it. Okay. Yeah.
He can only suspend belief so much.
Yeah. Exactly.
Speaking of suspension of belief, I was sitting there, I was watching, and then my wife goes, how come they have a California accent?
In New York, I know. You're right.
No, Raphael doesn't have a California accent. Yeah,
you're right. Raphael is like straight up Brooklyn over there. But what's up with all the cowabunga and the tubular and radical and all those things?
Because there's a lot of surfing in New York.
Sewer surfing. Sewer surfing, of course. The part that threw me off about. Yeah, so sorry, going back to the movie real quick, but the part that kind of threw me off, speaking of Casey Jones, was for when I was watching the movie again this last week, I could have sworn it was Christopher Maloney who played Casey Jones. Okay. Christopher Maloney, of course, from Law and Order, SVU, and everything else, but no, it is played by. Thank you, Harold. Elias Koteas, who is not Christopher Maloney, obviously, but like I was just like thrown off. I could have sworn I was telling in my head I was like, oh, that guy from Casey Jones gets a job working with Ice-T, solving crimes.
I'm actually the opposite. Where the first time I saw Christopher Maloney, I was like, oh, Casey Jones found a new job, and then I was like, it's not quite him.
Casey Jones straightened out his life after he murdered Shredder, apparently.
I mean, they're yeah.
There's only so much you can go after killing the head of a ninjutsu clan in New York, I guess.
Did he really kill him, though?
That's true, you're right.
No, he totally murdered him.
You know, the ooze.
I know.
No, but the last thing that I kind of wanted to mention was that exactly how, I don't know, like, was I the only one that that actually thought that April O'Neil was pretty in that movie, or?
You're alone on that one, bro. Sorry. I thought, you know, not to be a chauvinistic pig here, but even 10-year-old Lewis back then, I was like, April could have been prettier. They could have. Was Julia Roberts busy? Was it?
I think she was. That was the same year Pretty Woman came out.
Oh, my bad. Okay, I didn't know that. So she was busy, my bad. Sharon Stone, was it? This is before Total Recall. Maybe she had a few time, you know, hopefully she had a few hours to kill at a barn to shoot some scenes. But yeah, I don't know, man. More or less, April O'Neil in all versions of media has been pretty much on the mark. Unfortunately, I got to say, this one was not doing it for me. Not that Megan Fox is going to be the end-all, be-all for April O'Neil's, but, you know, that's there.
No, like we said earlier, the end-all, be-all of April O'Neil's is April O'Neil.
Yeah.
She's an attractive woman. You don't know who we're talking about? Do not look it up on the internet.
Yeah.
She is not Brenda Song. No.
She's not London Tipton. as a kid, I didn't figure it out, like, until watching The Secret of the Ooze. I was like, is that a different April O'Neil? Because you know how, like, when you're like a little kid, you don't really notice too much about, like, actors and everything. Like, for a while, I didn't even know that there was two different Jennifers in Back to the Future until I actually watched the movies.
Yeah, right.
And then, yeah, so it's like, I was like, ew, I think April O'Neil got hotter in the second one, but it's because we're spending way too much time talking about the
appearance. The attractiveness of a woman in yellow jumpsuits.
And it's just like, you know, it skews the whole thing because we have Megan Fox ending up being the last, you know, April O'Neil played by a human. But, yeah. And then, you know, the great thing about this is around this time is when the video game comes out.
Oh, yeah. Let's talk about the video game, dude.
Can we talk about when we played the video game together?
Which one?
The original. Oh, okay. Let's talk about both the two original games.
We're talking about the NES, or are we talking about the arcade game?
We'll talk about both.
Okay.
You want to talk about the NES game first?
Yeah, let's go NES first.
Let's talk about that, because mine's going to be real short, because again, as always, I'm the filthy gamer here. I loved, yet hated that game. I could not get further than freaking Bebop.
What?
Yeah, dude, I told you I'm garbage, man. And, you know, I read, you know, it was, of course, back then, before the internet, before EGM, before cheat codes were going around, every kid at the yard was like, you got to pick Donatello because he's got the staff and he's got the reach, and that's cheese. It's better than picking Raphael or Michelangelo, who has no range on their weapons. And I still did, and like I said, I couldn't beat the freaking first boss, and yeah, garbage.
I can never get past the dam.
So
see, I don't even know how far that is, dude. So, I need to fire up the emulator and see how far I can go. But go ahead, then.
I'm with Harold. The dam was like the level that I could not get past, and I think that's my biggest problem is I might have. I'm not that I'm claiming I'm a great player, a great gamer, but I hated. When I play Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, I always play with one character. It's always Raphael, and because of the fact that he had such short range, it made things so much harder. To the point where it got to the dam, I was like, nope, can't get past this. There's no way for Raphael to be able to get past this damn thing. But
you couldn't defuse all those all the mines, or what they call it, all the bombs. Impossible,
especially that given the time that we are.
Yeah,
like it's one of the few games that really I loved playing, but at the same time frustrated the crap out of me because
yeah,
it was just impossible, dude.
And then watching it back on speedruns is the most frustrating thing.
Oh,
because dude, you realize how easy it could have been.
Really? Oh.
Had, you know, like if, like I watched, you know, speedruns is one of those things that you just want to watch because you want to see them accomplish the game, you know. And then when it's a game that they say is completely almost impossible to beat, like Battletoads or Ghosts and Goblins, and then you see the original Ninja Turtles on NES and you see how easy they're able to do everything, it's like, I probably wouldn't have gone to therapy if I had known that there was if I'd known there was an easy way to beat that game. But
yeah, I've only heard legend of the dam level. I think I saw my cousin playing it because, like I said, I couldn't even beat the freaking bosses. But I love the game though. I mean, aesthetically, I used to think that the NES or the, you know, this game on the NES was the pinnacle of the console era, and there's no way it's getting any better than this. It did, you know, but still, 10-year-old Lewis was dumb.
How about, I think you mentioned a second game, Harold. Which one are you talking about?
The arcade game.
Classic. Classic. Love dropping freaking all my pesos back then. Actually, it wasn't even pesos. You had to, like, you dropped in 50 pesos for, like, five or six tokens. Love that game. And even when I came here to the States, I loved seeing it in the arcades. I loved seeing it at the Pizza Hut in Burbank and just playing it over there. Yeah. Great stuff, dude. I mean, definitely, I mean, that was one of those games that was definitely taken from the comic, or not comic book, definitely showed its influence from the video game. From the cartoon, excuse me. So yeah, I loved every part of it.
Quick story about that game. Like, yes, you're right. I love the video game, or the arcade game. But do you guys remember playing the home version of that?
Yeah, it was garbage.
Yes, I do remember that. Yes,
I would say no. It's the greatest game ever, Harold.
But it was single player.
It was, but that was the first. Video game I bought out of my pocket from my YMCA money.
Yeah, I feel bad.
I remember playing that game over and over and over again. It's a masterclass of all video games.
I just remember being disappointed in the fact that, you know, you couldn't play four players at the same. Well, obviously the limitations even for the NES itself. But do you guys remember when we went to Button Mash a couple years ago and there was a Ninja Turtles arcade machine there?
Yep.
I do. I love the new barcades. I love that. I love seeing that at 82 and at Button Mash.
Do you remember how quickly Lewis died?
I have never claimed to be good at video games. You can love a thing and not be good at it.
I just remember, we're like, dude, we just started, bro. And you're like, give me another quarter.
Well,
I gotta go to the change machine. Excuse me.
That's why I love my MAME emulator, because yes. I can play it as much as I want. Unfortunately, only two players, though. So,
okay. Yeah. I think the most I've gotten out of the emulator was this game and X-Men, because those were money black holes, dude. But yeah, great games, great memories.
How about the Avenger game?
Oh yes, dude. I think that was the first game that I finished when my wife got me the emulator for my birthday. So love seeing that.
You know, I always remember before Street Fighter came out, that was the game that I used to play the most, besides Ninja Turtles, and X-Men was because, you know, the four cabinet kind of deal. And I remember spending, my dad gave me $20 to play video games at the Excalibur, or Circus Arcade. And I came back and I was like, hey, I need more. And my dad was like, I gave you $20 in 1990, which is $1,000 now. And you know, conversion rate is pretty bad.
Yeah,
but
inflation.
I just remember my dad was like, "How did you?" And I was like, "There's this game. You get to throw Captain America shield." And then I learned that Captain America was pretty much the crappiest character. And all the Avengers, and I was like, damn it, I wasted my time.
Going back to Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, one last story for me. We were talking about the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the video game or the arcade game. Back in 1995, there was this something called the Grad Night in Disneyland.
Oh Jesus!
And in the arcade in Tomorrowland,
dated yourself. You know that, right?
They actually had.
You can bleep that part out.
Okay, fine, I guess. They actually had a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles arcade machine, the 4-player one. And I have to tell, like, I think I spent a good chunk of money just playing that game in freaking Disneyland.
While your classmates were having the time of their lives.
It's still a good memory for me, Dan.
There was only the one arcade, right? Or is it two arcades? The Penny Arcade and the one near Space Mountain?
Space Mountain. No, Space Mountain. That's yeah. That's the one that had the Turtles one.
I think that was the only one that had modern, like, up-to-date video games.
What a time to be alive.
Yeah. Hey, I mean, not going to lie, if I had graduated a few years earlier myself, I probably would have not played video games that night. I mean, you know, okay, I talked smack, but literally when me and my buddies came back from grad night, all we did was play StarCraft. you knock out for a few hours and you keep partying with your friends. And I was like, hey guys, it's 12 o'clock, time to play StarCraft. Because we're not just nerds, we're super nerds.
Okay. Anything else before we end our episode today?
You know, kudos to Eastman and Laird for creating a property that has endured time, so many different properties and so many different forms of entertainment that, yeah, even to this day, still kicking and still relevant. Awesome. Good for them.
Shout out to Corey Feldman for being an 80s icon in some of the greatest movies ever, such as Stand By Me and one of my favorites, The Goonies. And then having it all crash down and just being a voice in the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Oh,
hey, that's an accomplishment.
Which is it's still pretty good.
It's something better than nothing.
Yeah. Well, that's it for us today, I guess. Definitely lots more to talk about. Seeker of the Ooze is still there. We still have the damn good Nickelodeon version of it. So definitely something that we get to revisit. But, you know, as usual, you know, this is something that we love doing, but we also want you guys to be able to participate and be able to talk to us. And the best way for us to do this is through our social media accounts. First and foremost, I always talk about the two, damn it, I can't say it. The fanboys1casual.podbean.com, where all of our old episodes are. And of course,
on Facebook, you can find us, Two Fanboys and a Filthy Casual. Just plop that into the search bar. Add us, like us. Every time the podcast goes live, we'll be posting it there. Any fun news, articles, memes, jokes, and everything else you can find on the internet, we'll be posting it there. Not to mention our Facebook group. So feel free to add us there. You know, a bunch of like-minded fanboys and fangirls talking nerd all day and all night. Especially now in this day of quarantine, you know, if you want something fun to do, join us and let's talk.
And then, like I said, on Twitter and Instagram, we are Two Fanboys, One Casual, and you can find our podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. And as I found out earlier today, or kind of confirmed, if you ask one of your smart devices to play the Two Fanboys and a Filthy Casual, it will play our podcast.
Amazing.
Well, yeah. That's it for us today. Hopefully you enjoyed our episode. As usual, this is Two Fanboys and a Philip. Wow.
So close.
This is Dennis.
This is Lewis.
I just heard overlapping and I was like, damn
it. And again, that was not lag.
No, that was your best. This is Harold.
See you later.
Kawabunga, dudes.
I knew you were going to say that.
I knew it. Sorry.
Bossa Nova!
Bossa Nova.